there tonight. He might be there next week. That's his choice. KC2WGB, if you happen to be there, your choice. K2RIs will be in the TechNet. Okay. And when Paul comes back, is it Paul or is it George? I think it was Paul, into MOD with information that he was researching. He's allowed to break in whenever he comes back with his information. And so, that interesting launch, I'm now talking to Paul WS2N, our space expert. The Chinese company, the Chinese are about to issue more launches with reference to their non-international space station. They're also launched in the last couple of days a quantum satellite that, quantum entanglement. They launched a satellite that favors quantum entanglement photon communication. Really wild stuff. And the great advantage, if it works, is that it can't be hacked, and you know when somebody has broken into your system, because you leave a trail with that system. So there's an article in the latest issue of Electronic Design News about that one. Over to you, Paul. WS2N, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Yeah, I had that on one of the nets about a month ago. Talked about it briefly. That was the quantum satellite that China sent up. Actually, it's been up there for a while now. So it actually went up mid-August. I guess in almost 4 weeks. But they call it Quest, QUESS. That's the quantum space satellite. They call it quantum experiment at space scale. So they call it QUESS. And I think it was around 1,000 kilogram. It went into a sun synchronous orbit. So they sent it about 1,000 kilometers high. So, you know, in a 600 mile range. Now they do have quantum capability between two countries, two locations already. I think it's Beijing and I think it was Shanghai or someplace. But it was a 2,000 kilometer contact that they've had without the satellite. Let me drop it. But now they're testing it with the satellite, and actually between Europe and China. So hopefully that pans out for them, because, you know, it's going to show that it's possible to do this using laser communication. I would imagine if this clouds, there's going to be problems with have strong enough lasers to get through that. They want to communicate with light. They have optic receivers on Earth. So we'll see. They also want to try photon teleportation. Some people believe that that's going to be possible as well on that satellite. That's been proven in labs, but not using our space satellite. They're really moving ahead. China has a full blast space program. Last week, a couple of days ago, actually, they launched the second generation space station. Let me drop it. The Tiangong 2. And a little bit more advanced than Tiangong 1. I thought it was going to have the two ports, the docking ports, but it's still got the one. They decided to put all that money into Tiangong 3 for 2018, and then that'll be the one that goes up. It'll have five docking ports, and they'll be able to do the modular design, what you would call Generation 3. But they need this one to prove some technologies that they didn't have with Tiangong 1. By the way, that means heavenly palace. That's the translation for the staying on board a month, which would be a record for them. I think they made 2 weeks last time. So that's all they could do, because they have a version of their Progress ship built, ready to go. But because they only have the one docking port, it's going to be a problem. So they're going to send a robotic cargo ship up after they come back. And then another mission probably in April. So China's really marching on their way. Let me drop it. But that's, if you want to talk more about the Qantas thing, we can do that later. But I just want to bring up a couple of the items that I thought would be interesting. I pay a lot of attention nowadays to all the space launches, not only nationally, but internationally. But I'm particularly interested in the commercial flights. Right now, SpaceX, or Space Exploration Technology is actually their name, but SpaceX is having some trouble because they blew up on the launch pair, launch complex 40 on September 1st, and they're still trying to work out the problems on why that happened. But why they're down, one of their competitions called Blue Origin has come out with a new rocket / spaceship that they plan on developing, and they'll be launching this by probably 2019 will be the first launch, or maybe 2020, 4 or 5 years from now. They're building a new complex down in facility to build these things down in Florida. They broke ground on that. Blue Origin is now going ahead with they came out with a new name for this rocket. For anybody that doesn't know, Blue Origin has been launching something called the New Shepard from Texas down in they have a launch facility in Texas, suborbital. Let me drop it. And that's been going on for some time now. They have something called the New Shepard is now four times they've launched it, and they've landed it vertically, launches vertically, comes back, vertically back to a launch pad location right near where they took off. And they've been coming down on the money. They've done it four times with the same rocket. Now, next month in October, they plan on taking the exact same rocket, launching it again, and having the spacecraft separate from the rocket, which they've done in the past, but this time intentionally at a very low altitude, maximum Q, when the pressure of the air and the speed is at the highest pressure. And this is a test. If anybody was on board, the spacecraft will separate. They have a pusher rocket in the center of the spacecraft, which is going to push away from the main rocket. And the idea is, the booster is about to explode, and the crew needs to escape, so they have this escape system. And the parachutes will come out, big blue parachutes, and they'll come back down and land. And they expect to lose the New Shepard on this flight, because when that pusher rocket goes off, it probably will push that booster out of control. But they really don't care. The idea of the test is to test for an abort. So this company has been developing that. They plan on eventually put up to 6 people on board the spacecraft. They have people that lined up, already paid money to do this. So within a year or two, they might be able to reach that goal and send people on suborbital flights. Now, this is one rocket using what they call the BE-3 rocket. BE-3 rocket is one rocket, one engine attached to this new Shepard. And it uses liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen to do that. And it's been testified many, many times in a stand, and quite a few times, like I said, in said before, launching from the launch pad and coming back down and landing. But now they have announced the new rocket, which is going to be orbital. And they have already have leased out one of the launch complexes down in Florida called Launch Complex 36, not being used anymore by NASA or by the Air Force. So what happens is they're going to lease it out, and they're reconfiguring the launch complex to launch their new rocket. The new rocket is going to be called the New Glenn. I should have guessed that, because the New Shepard was named after Alan Shepard, who was the first American astronaut that his first flight was suborbital to test out the Mercury spacecraft. Let me drop it. This is WS2N. Now this rocket is going to be orbital, and sure enough, they named it the New Glenn, named after John Glenn. And why? Because he's the first American that actually went into orbit. But this rocket is going to be quite large. It's going to be very large. It's going to be bigger than the Falcon 9 rocket, and substantially so, probably about 50 feet longer than the 229-foot Falcon 9 that they have now. The diameter is going to be much wider too, roughly a little over 23-foot diameter of this rocket. Compare that to the Falcon 9, which has a 12-foot diameter, so it's really like double the diameter.
Rocket that pushes the payload or people to Earth orbit.
New Glenn will also have the second version. So there are two versions of this thing. The second version will have three stages. First stage will have the seven engines, just like the first version. Seven engines of the BE-4, liquid methane, liquid oxygen. Second stage, again, we'll have one BE-4. But then the third stage could be comprised of the BE-3. The BE-3 is the one I was speaking about earlier that they've actually flown many times before in Texas. And that will be the liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen rocket. Let me drop it. And to boot, to make this thing really amazing, is they're going the route of SpaceX. They plan on landing the first stage, the booster, eventually on a floating platform, similar to what SpaceX has been doing. So, there's many other topics here tonight, but let me just pass it back to you, and see what you think so far. K2RIWWS2S.
I'm rather amazed, Paul, of the number of things being developed, how far downrange, how many different styles, different companies. Boy, we have really branched out from when NASA used to do everything, NASA plus their subcontractors. Now you've got the equivalent of independent vendors, Lockheed, Boeing, Elon Musk, can't even think of what his name of his company is, and others, which I think are now receiving funds from NASA to help them along, to get them established in this space launch business. And so now, instead of all of our eggs in one basket, so to speak, we've got a whole lot of individual baskets, a whole lot of individual vendors. Let me drop.
I wonder if Paul could give us an explanation of that Chinese rocket. I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, are you talking about the one that has quantum entanglement, the quantum rocket? Is that the one you're talking about, or the Chang'an, the one that is their equivalent of a space station? It's a non-international space station. So which are you asking about, and maybe both, Barry, into moon bounce, K2RAW?
I want to start with quantum entanglement. I haven't a clue what that means. Am I stupid or something?
I'm going to let you in on a little dirty secret, Barry. The people who have been reading about quantum entanglement for the last 10 years, most of us don't believe it, don't understand it. What has been discovered some number of decades ago is that under certain conditions, you take two individual photons, somehow you produce them from a common source, you declare them to be quantum entangled. What that means, I don't know. But I know that you take these two photons that are quantum entangled, you send one of them out a zillion miles away, you keep one of them local, you make some kind of a change of state of the one that's local. The belief is the one that's a zillion miles away changes in the opposite way at the exact same instant as if there is no speed of life problem. Of course that sounds crazy. So I send one of my quantum entangled photons out to Pluto. I keep one of them in orbit with me near the Earth. I change the state of the one that's near me, and the one that's near Pluto changes instantaneously. No speed of light problem. This is the belief. And some experiments supposedly have taken place to confirm this craziness. Let me drop. If this quantum entanglement phenomena is real, you can send tremendous amounts of data at a very fast rate across very long distances with no time delay. It'd be a great way to talk to your extraterrestrial guys out there by this means, if it's real. How the hell do you test a thing like that? Well, a rocket that's now going the next step of testing this is what the Chinese just launched didn't explain it right, but see if you can clear up what quantum entanglement means, Paul. To me, it sounds like spookiness at a distance. And boy, I'm having trouble believing it, because if it's half real, it exceeds the speed of light with information. WS2N, K2LIW, go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, I always thought it was in the experimental stage until I read about this thing going up. And from what I understand, I've read a number of different websites, reliable websites that I generally go to. And they say that the Chinese have the capability of talking to one another from Shanghai to Beijing on the ground. You know, they have a some kind of an optical link, probably fiber optic, I would assume, maybe, between the two countries, 2,000 kilometers. Now they want to be able to use it from a space station. They want to use this thing as a repeater. They launched this thing on a long march in the middle of August. And I haven't heard any results yet from it, whether or not this has been successful. And the contact locations for the test is supposed to be between Europe, and I can't find out where, somewhere in Europe and China. And if this all succeeds, they plan on running a global setup with multiple satellites in 2030. That's really all I know about it. I think Dick explained it the best. I'm fascinated with the photon. Let me drop it. Photon teleportation. I still don't get, you know. Apparently you could teleport a photon from one location to another. You don't see how that's possible. I think it has to do with this quantum entanglement thing. And they say you know the state of these two quantum pieces before it leaves, and you send one halfway across the universe, you'll know what that, you'll know the state, the spin of that quantum pieces, you know, and no, you know, you don't have to worry about the speed of light, like Dick said. We'll have to all read up on this. I think it might be on the next ham radio test. Just joking, back to you, Dick.
Barry, if you Google the word quantum entanglement and go to the right Wikipedia site, they will attempt to explain it to you. And as you read those article or articles, I guarantee you're going to say, bull. That's a pile of bull. How in the world can these two photons, who have been declared entangled, quantum entangled, and you change the state of one, and instantaneously the other one will change its state, even though it is a zillion miles away. Boy, that sounds like a lot of spookiness at a lot of distance. And so, for the time being, I don't believe it, but there have been a few experiments that seem to confirm it, and if it's real, it's as good as a wormhole as far as communication is concerned, Barry. I don't blame you for saying, I don't believe it. And do moon bounce? Boy, if we could do this with moon bounce, Barry, there'd be no 2.5 second delay. N2MB, K2LIW. Do you have an experiment with reference to what's going on tonight here, Eric? K2EJ, K2IW, go ahead.
Okay, I'm gonna jump into the house, so I'll see you at the other end at 2MB.
Wouldn't it be nice if it was real, Barry? K2EJ, K2IW, go ahead, Eric, if you want to.
Yeah, Sam.
K2IW, K2EJ, can you hear me?
I'm hearing you beautiful. A little bit of squeal in the background, but I'm hearing you beautifully. Go ahead.
Okay, you're hearing me coming out of 85N375.
275 and 85 simultaneously. You sound equally good out of both, Eric. Go ahead.
Come on, the comment.
Now I'm hearing you out of the 85, out of 375 only. That last transmission, it came out of 375, but didn't come out of 85. Go ahead.
Yeah, 1-2. Am I coming out of 85 now?
You're coming out of 85 now. You're coming out of both right now.
I guess I just got to leave enough space. So you're hearing me now, right?
I'm hearing you out of both right now, Eric. Go ahead.
All right, good enough. Thank you. Carry on.
Okay, Rich, WB2GXM, K2RIW. I hope you did hear that there's a second person offering you pods for a DX60B. And maybe you got a first question on quantum entanglement. WB2GXM, K2RIW. You got it, Rich.
I think I was off the air for that second offer, so I'll have to listen to it on the archive. As far as the entangled photons, Einstein himself called it spooky entanglement, WB2GXM.
Yeah, I think he called it spookiness at a distance. The other person who's got DX60s, two or three of them, is WB2AHK, Whiskey Bravo 2, Alpha Hotel Kilo, in Floral Park. Chet is his name. He's got two or three DX60s, and the price is right. They're all free of charge. Parts, units, the whole works. His call letters at AOL.com, I believe, is what you'll find his email address out of QRZ.com. So, WB2 Alpha Hotel Kilo. Chet also has DX60s. He wants to give them to somebody who's going to give them a warm home. WB2GXM, K2RIW. Go ahead, Rich.
Okay, Dick, I know Chet well. I'm going to have to give him a call. It's been a while since we visited, so I'm just going to give him a call and go over there. WB2GXM.
Good luck with that. And more DX60s to you. Yeah, spookiness at a distance. Sounds much too good to be true. But you told us it was a, I think you said it was a 5,000 kilogram, or is it a 2,000 kilogram satellite? That's a lot of thousands of pounds. That's a heavy beast that's doing this. I mean, why does so much mass required to issue these tiny little photons that are almost have no mass at all? Why is that satellite so heavy? Maybe it's a great big dish that's connected to it to confirm its communication. WS2N, K2RIW, go ahead, Paul.
You know, I have a picture of the satellite itself, but it's, I guess, batteries and two solar panels, and then they have a long arm coming out from it. I haven't figured out what that's, for some reason they have this arm attached to the satellite. I can't imagine what it does, and then the top part, some kind of a dish. It looks like a horn to me, or maybe a corner reflector, but solid looking. I'm not sure of the, what any of it is, except for the solar panels, and they don't describe the parts. Unfortunately, China keeps everything quiet. I guess it'll come out in time. They really want some kind of security with their communication. I guess if this works, they'll have it. I just wonder why we're not doing it. Well, maybe we are with our NRO, National Reconnaissance Office. There's a lot of spy satellites and secret satellites and communication satellites that are launched, that we launched, that we know nothing about. Maybe we're already doing this for all I know. Back to you, Dick.
So this satellite with the quantum entanglement experiment has a very long arm sticking out of it. And I can think of about two or three reasons why you establish a very long arm. One of them, you put a nuclear radioactive power supply, a thermal electric generator, on the end of that arm. And you space it a long distance from your satellite so that the radiation coming out of it doesn't damage your electronics. That's one approach. The other approach is to take your nuclear thermal electric generator and shield it very well. Another reason you put something on a very long arm is you want to make a magnetic measurement. What's the local magnetic field like? And with a very long arm, you remove it from the local magnetic fields of your electronics, which can never be made to go zero. And is there a third reason? Yeah, the arm itself could be a very long monopole antenna. I doubt that one, but it's possible. So, and the long arm maybe has a sliding mass that you send out there as a way of using conservation of angular momentum. In other words, if your satellite is spinning at a particular rate, and you take some of its mass and push that mass out on a very long arm, the satellite's rotational rate will close, slow down. Let me drop it. It's a little bit like an ice skater. It's doing a spin on the ice and draws their arms in, and they spin faster, and push their arms out, and they spin slower. Conservation of angular momentum. So moving a mass along the arm, long shot, possible. Radioactive generator, possible. Magnetic measurement, a lot more possible in my opinion. And the arm itself is an antenna. So, do you have a guess what is likely to be a ball, even though the Chinese haven't told us? You know how to look at these hardware after all these years, so you can probably make a fairly educated guess. WS2N, K2LIW.
I know, the whole satellite itself is 500 kilograms, so what's that, 1,100 pounds, plus fuel and stuff, so it's not all that big. Two solar panels, and these arms that look like they were, naturally it was probably all compressed, and now it's all expanded, so one arm comes out of one direction, and another one goes out the other one. So my guess, they need 1-4 optical communication. They did say they're going to use lasers, and the other one is probably regular RF. You know, they're going to be able to get the telemetry and whatever's going on with the satellite. They probably have to have them separated. I don't know why they need to have them so separated. But, and they're at 97.79 degrees. They have that here. That's the common degree for sun synchronous circular orbits. You know, it'll always face the sun. It'll never go into the shade. It'll rotate with the Earth. That's one thing that'll do. So, you know, next year it'll be the same. It's a 2-year mission, so it's a 2-year test. That's about all I know about it, Dick.
Now, I think I've read that the Chinese are strongly talking about putting a Chinese man, on the moon. They're making minor hints about going to Mars, but it sounds like they're not only building space stations, but I think they've got a plan to put a man on the moon and maybe even establish some kind of a base station on the moon. We've discussed this before. The fact that we've, on 6 occasions, seen a total of 12 American satellites standing on the surface of the moon during the Apollo program, Apollo 11 through 17. Let me drop this. We all forget about the fact that each one of those landings, which only lasts a day or two or three maximum, are very carefully choosing the place of landing during the lunar month. They're landing at a place that's halfway between high noon and dusk, where the temperature is controlled, because at high noon, which lasts for 14 days, the temperature goes ridiculously high on the moon. At nighttime, which lasts for 14 days, the temperature goes ridiculously cold. And so, if you had to supply the energy to heat yourself to 70 degrees Fahrenheit inside your suit during that lunar night, it would take a lot of energy. And if you're going to keep yourself cooled during a lunar day, it would take a huge amount of air conditioning. And if that air conditioning should even hiccup, you're going to fry. So, until you establish either a... Let me drop. Until you establish a lunar base very near the north and south pole of the moon, or unless you establish a lunar base that is, let me pick a number, 100 feet below the surface, where the temperature is more constant, until you establish either one of those, which is not easy, you can't leave a human being there for a lunar day, 28 days. You've got to cook them and freeze them, alternately. And in both cases, it's way beyond life-threatening. So, to say a lunar base station, nice easy words, to put somebody on the moon briefly, I believe that. Permanently, I mean, for more than, let's say, a week, wow. That's one hell of an endeavor. WS2N, K2LIW. Go right ahead, Eric.
Right. Maybe he wants to do a test.
Right. We're back on our ALP. The 9125 is now running. That's what I'm actually talking about now. And I'm going to see if I can raise Vic to UPS. And maybe he'll try it.
Yeah, I'm hearing you out of 85. I'm not hearing you out of 375, Eric. And I didn't listen to 95, but I'm going to do that on the next transmission. Go ahead.
Hello. Yeah, I hear you coming out of 375.
Okay. I'm hearing you out of 95 with delay. And on your previous transmission, I checked 85 and 375, and you were not coming out of 375. Give me another transmission.
All right, K2RIW. K2J, that's 375. I don't know, I can't. I don't have enough radio to listen to 85 at the same time. But I'm talking on 9125 right now.
I'm hearing you on 85 directly. 9125 with some delay, and not out of 375. Your voice is not coming out of 375, even though mine is. Over to you, Eric.
I got him on 375, Dick.
Okay, give us another transmission, Eric. You're right. I'm hearing you out of 375 and out of 915, but not out of 85 on that last transmission. Go ahead.
All right, let me tune this other video. All right, go back to what you're doing.
Now I'm hearing you out of 85 and 375, and I think you were there on 95, but I didn't get a chance to check it in that brief time. Go ahead. Hearing any. I'm hearing no delay out of 375, but I do some hear delay out of 9125. You know about that. Okay, so what we're to put a Chinese man on the moon and call it a lunar base. We've all seen space, Star Trek 9 or whatever. We've seen a number of science fiction programs on television where they simply set up a lunar base. And they have these lunar cars and they go traveling around from base to base and whatever, whenever they want to. Sounds right. Until you get into the specifics of what huge temperature extremes you get on one single lunar day. And so to put a man in that base without it having fantastic insulation, and he only goes outside during the morning and dusk. He doesn't go out during high noon, he doesn't go out at midnight, or the base itself has to be a good number of feet below the surface where the temperature is more constant. Until you do either one of those, you can't establish a lunar base with human beings on it. You only want to put a human being there for very brief periods of time. Lots and lots of people don't know that detail. WS2N, K2LAW.
Yeah, just because they have the goal of doing it doesn't mean they're going to do it right away. Once they get the first launch there, they'll be sending mission after mission and trying to set up the infrastructure. Not only them, India has long-term plans of doing it on their own as well. About 2 years ago, they sent a capsule up into space and brought it back down to check the heat shield. So, a lot of people are planning on these things, but their first goal is to actually land on the moon and survive on there just like we did. But, the goal is to go near Shackleton. Shackleton crater is on the south side of the moon. Mostly daylight there. So that will help. They could set up these solar panels. I always thought they could go back to fuel cells for some, for quite a bit of time. Those things were pretty reliable. They started using them in the Gemini missions. And Gemini 5 was the first mission, and then they used them after that throughout the Apollo and shuttle program. Very successful. A lot of trouble getting rid of the heat. That's why you need those big radiators on a space shuttle when the doors opened up. If the doors didn't open up, the shuttle was coming back because they couldn't radiate enough heat from the fuel cells. I'm dropping. Nuclear, of course that's going to be out. Now, China has plans on doing this, but first they're going to send another robotic mission there. Chang 5, they call it. They were successful with Chang 3 that landed, and they had a little rover leave the lander called U2, and it drove a couple of hundred meters away. Eventually that failed, but they kept communicating with the lander through the lunar night. And this went on for a year and a half. And eventually they lost communications. But to keep people alive, they're going to need a lot of infrastructure, a lot of landings. Sooner or later, somebody's going to be able to do it. It won't be us. We don't have plans on doing it. So if anything, it'll be them. The Russians, we drop it.
E2EJW2KP2.
I hear stations coming through. Got that working. So it won't, it won't be us. But the Russians have plans. They're building a new spacecraft called the Federation. It's going to replace the Soyuz module, and eventually that will be capable of carrying four people to Cis Moon. They call it the Cis Lunar location. And we'll eventually be able to do the same with the Orion. We'll be able to orbit at the L2 position by the moon, 40,000 miles away, actually 38,000 miles away from the lunar surface, and just stay there. a lot of weird things that are going to be coming up. But yeah, a little base, I'm not going to be seeing that probably until somewhere in mid-2030s, I would think. Let me drop one time.
Yeah, I think Eric wants to say something. And Eric, I'm hearing a beautiful audio out of 375 and 9125. But those two audios are a little bit harsh and a little bit noisy, but I think you know about that. KE2EJ, K2RIW, go ahead, Eric.
I was just making a connection. That's why it announced the program on Plainview wasn't running. I just fired it up.
Yeah, by whatever means you're coming in right now, you are nice and noise-free on all three outputs, whereas when Paul and I listen to our outputs on the other two, it's either a little delayed or a little bit harsh and a little bit noisy. But you sound beautiful. However you're getting in, you've got a better way. KE2EJ, K2RIW.
K2RIW, KE2EJ. At the moment, I'm going in through 375. Okay. I'm going to clean up and put everything in the car and head back home.
So I guess the link from Glen Oaks to 375 is a slightly noisy link. Is that what we're hearing, Eric? Go ahead. So, from what I heard you say, Paul, not only is China going to go to the moon, but India is going to the moon. And have they made a rough guess as to when? Is China going to be on the moon in 4 years and India in 10 years or something like that? And has either one made any hint about Mars? That's the one that I'm extremely skeptical about, no matter who does it. So, when it comes to moon, what's roughly the guess at timing for China and India? WS2N, K2RIW.
That's why I like space history. It's already done. We know what happened and when it happened. But to predict the future, China was talking about, they had a whole series a while back on how they were going to do it, all their moves, and I seem to remember 2025 was roughly the time that they planned the first landing there. They have a sample return mission that's coming up first. They've got to do that. About a year ago, they sent a satellite to the moon, didn't land there, but around the moon, and then it came back and wanted to see how they were going to do with that. So it's like anything else, you know, they want to make all that stuff, you know, the one that went around the moon that had a heat shield and came back and landed in the Gobi Desert, where they take off from, too. That's one of the launch complexes. I think they have around four launch complexes. So they're quite active. I would say probably not equal to us, but, you know, probably around 30% of all the flights that go up are probably from China. And then we split between us and the Russians. India's flying a lot of flights. They have two launch vehicles now. They have the Polar launch vehicle and then a geosynchronous launch vehicle that they just they used their second launch for that recently. That was successful. So now they're launching all their own geosynchronous satellites instead of paying Ariane or us to do it.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
Let's call it a mini shuttle version of a space plane that they're working on. They've tested twice so far. First one was suborbital and landed in Biscayne Bay, and then the second one was almost orbital and went all the way to the Pacific. They tested out the aeronautics of that thing. It looks like a very small space shuttle. And and they plan on scaling that up. Time goes up, goes by, and they plan on eventually having crews on these things and coming back just like we used to do with the space shuttle. So we have a lot of competition. Not that, you know, the American companies that we have are really going full blast. We'll have a shuttle-like thing coming back in the future called Dream Chase. Dream Chase is being built by Sierra Nevada, Sierra Nevada, comes out of Colorado, and they have a contract with NASA to bring up cargo to the space station, and then they're going to land like an airplane. And that'll be done by 2019. So a lot going on. India, you know, they've got, they're, you know, behind China, so I'm expecting them in the probably 2030 category to get to the moon. Let me drop it. I was going to say we had a launch postponed before I heard Eric. I was waiting for that to go up. I was watching that. That was by United Launch Alliance. They were launching a private satellite. They usually launch, you know, strictly government, you know, military and National Reconnaissance Office or the NASA flights. They've done a half a dozen now private flights, and this was one of them. And they were going to go up from California, from Vandenberg Air Force Base on Friday. But that was scrubbed. Very unusual for an Atlas V to be scrubbed. But it was due to, not the rocket, but on the launch pad itself, they had one of the connectors feeding hydrogen to the... helium. One of the gases going to the launch vehicle. Yeah, I believe it was hydrogen for the second stage, but it sent to a rocket. It was leaking, and it created like a big ball of ice on the umbilical cord. So they scrubbed that launch, and they were going to launch 2 days later, actually today. Let me drop it. But things are so dry out in California. They don't have weather problems, they have fire problems. So there's a wildfire not too far from the launch facility. So they're busy with crews putting that out. And even so, they would be able to launch. It's not on top of the launch pad. It's, you know, on Vandenberg Air Force Base. But you can't have crews, you know, within, you know, a certain distance from the launch pad. So they scrub that, and that probably won't go off until another week or two. So I was looking forward to see that go up. That's some kind of a private company. They're going to be launched in a sun synchronous orbit as well, similar to that quantum satellite. And they'll be able to take pictures of the Earth. I think they said down to 1.2 meters resolution. Very amazing resolution. A company called Worldview is doing this. Back to you, Dick. So we talk about going to Mars next, but that's a long way off. WS2F.
And as you guys heard me say so often, a manned mission to Mars, I really don't believe it for a whole bunch of reasons. Now, as our newspapers give us very little information about China, this quantum leap, this quantum entanglement satellite was in Newsday in the last couple of days. But an awful lot of the Chinese space stations and whatever, we get very light coverage. But China has done lots of launches. I think they're on their second space station, among other things. They probably put up a number of synchronous satellites and low Earth orbit satellites, and probably talking about their version of global positioning satellites. Tell me about India. What's the total number of launches that you know about space launches that India has made in the past. Let me drop it. In the past, NASA has done a number of launched satellites for India. NASA did those launches in the past. But what has India done on their own recently? So they have pretty good-sized boosters, and many of them, and the ability to put things in low Earth orbit, medium Earth orbit, geosynchronous orbit. Tell me a little bit about India. You probably have, but I don't have it all together in my mind right now, WS2N, K2LIW.
Yeah, they have the Polo launch vehicle, they call it, and the geosynchronous launch vehicle, which is bigger. And, their rocket is different than us. When we send up a rocket, most of our rockets are fueled with a liquid fuel rocket, you know, the main core of the rocket. And then we attach solid booster rockets to the whatever it might be, the space shuttle or the Atlas V. Solid booster rockets come off. Sometimes we send up one solid booster with an Atlas V, or sometimes we'll send up five solid boosters with an Atlas V, like when we launched New Horizons to Pluto. But India does it a little bit different. They launch the core is solid, and then the booster rockets are liquid, which is strange, but they've been very successful in the last couple of years with the polar launch vehicle, they call it. And now the geosynchronous one, which is larger. And I would say they probably launch about, I don't know, 6 or 8 flights per year in the last couple of years. So they're doing pretty good. They launch their communication satellites up there now, geosynchronous orbit. And I think the last one had two geosynchronous satellites attached to it, similar to what European Space Agency does with the Ariane 5. So they've come a long way. They've got a couple of launch pads.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
Ocean. So, I don't know. You know, they're pushing for a lot of high tech stuff with that eventual space shuttle type of thing they plan on doing. So you have a lot of countries involved. You even have New Zealand involved. You know, we can go down the list. New Zealand has a launch complex. It's being built by a company called Rocket Lab. Rocket Lab is launching something called the Electron rocket, and they're going to be launching low Earth orbit satellites, polar orbits mostly. You know, in the probably 500 kilogram range, and that probably will start at the end of the year or maybe next year. But they're ready to go. They have something called the Rutherford rocket, nine engines, very similar to the layout that SpaceX has with their nine engines, but these are completely different. They're called the Electron rocket. Not that they're going to use electrons, but you're going to use electricity to run the turbo pumps instead of using the high pressure gas. So it's a different system. Got another company that just started up in, they're going to rent out a launch pad in Florida called Firefly. Let me drop it. Firefly is going to launch